Hello everyone, this is the translation of Pascal Girard's message for Sunday the 20th of September. You have noticed how long time sometimes seems. I remember when I was in 6th or 5th grade in middle school and when I was one of the few to have a watch on my wrist. And there was a guy right in front of me who kept turning around asking me the time, until I told him to go take a walk, which had caught the attention of the teacher to find out that I was able to raise my voice. As annoying as this guy could have been, I have to admit I had an advantage over him, the watch on my wrist. My only concern was to be discreet when looking at it. But it's true how long time seemed back then. If in our youth time did not pass quickly, as we get older it ends up passing too quickly. But this year again the time seems to pass slowly. We experienced confinement. We've been out of confinement for a while now. We almost forgot what life was like before. We were told to stay in our house, meet or work by video conference. Now we can meet again. We have to think about putting some distance between us, covering our faces, cleaning the surfaces that we have touched. But as useful as these tools may be, they ultimately exist only for our survival. We have spent the last few months trying not to get sick and not to make people around us sick. We tried not to go bankrupt, not to lose jobs, and for some, not to lose our minds while everyone stayed at home. In other words, our mindset was strictly focused on survival. For some, it still is. When you're in the middle of a crisis, you're just trying to survive. It's necessary. But here it is. Survival, basically, is not the life that God has for us. God did not create us to survive. He created us to make our life meaningful. And the only way we live a meaningful life is to move on. This is the subject of this series. There are a few key things that can help you achieve this. Today we are going to see if we are able to imagine again a life filled with meaning. If we are able to imagine something greater than what we currently know. Frankly, to be honest with you, I think we've kind of lost the sense of adventure. We need to restart our minds to be able to imagine a future. And the Bible contains stories of people who knew God wanted them to dream of a new and better day. People, for example, like Jacob, son of Isaac, son of Abraham, who finds himself in one of the most stressful times of his life. He is face to face with a world that completely escapes him, because his brother Esau comes to see him. And even though they may be brothers, Jacob wonders if Esau will take revenge on him, if he has a grudge against him. In fact, the relationship between the two brothers, Jacob and Esau, has always been tumultuous. And there you are. Jacob is terrified. In addition, it is dark. Jacob is alone in the desert. What happens in chapter 32 of the book of Genesis is one of the strangest stories in the Bible. Jacob wrestles with God all night. So I don't know exactly what wrestling with God is like, but I'm pretty sure I wouldn't come out victorious. And yet, this is the strange part of the story. When the fight must be over, God commands Jacob to let him go. Do you know what Jacob says? No, I won't let you go unless you bless me. Have you ever said no to God? Jacob isn't even arguing for his survival. His prayer makes sense. With God's blessing comes the promise of a new day. God blessed Jacob that night, and instantly his life was transformed so drastically that he was given a new name. He was called Israel, which means he struggles with God. And it was when he was worried, the word is weak. It was when he was terrified while awaiting reunion with his brother Esau that he received from God the blessing and the promise of a future for himself, all his family, and his people. Now, in Mark's Gospel, we read the story of a person who was taken to Jesus and whose stretcher was carried through a passage made in the roof of the house. Well, these four stretcher bearers thought that this paralyzed man could have another future than the one he knew. Jesus saw what was going on and the faith of these men, and he healed their friend. Does God always answer those who seek a true future? Of course not. But God invites you and me in the process of creating a new world. And to get there, you have to allow yourself to imagine what this world could be like. In Philippians chapter 4, verses 4 to 6, we read, "Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. Rejoice in what the Lord has done for you and present your requests to God while expressing your gratitude to him." In Luke 17, verse 6, we read, "He replied, 'If you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and planted in the sea, and it will obey you.'" Why not dare to imagine big? In Matthew 17:20, we read, "He replied, 'Because you have so little faith. Truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you.' It's big. It's even gigantic. But why would I need to pray and ask God for something that is already within my reach?" Look for the miracles in the Word. I will only give you a few examples. The manna. This will serve as my first example. It is a gift from God for the Israelites who fled from Egypt by crossing the desert. They received it each morning in sufficient quantity for their daily needs. God performed a miracle there that allows us to see his faithfulness and have confidence in him even in the midst of trial. Admittedly, the manna was small compared to the food of the Israelites when they were in Egypt. But in our own walk towards something else, towards a more open and liberated future, let us not forget that this miserable food, as it is called in Numbers 21 verse 5, becomes the bread of angels in Psalm chapter 78 verse 25, and the bread of heaven in Psalm 105 verse 40. Did God say to the Israelites, and to Moses in particular, "Listen, Moses, you better stay in Egypt because you will eat your fill of vegetables that come from the land you cultivate. So stay there"? What is the idea of saving your people? Okay, not everything went very well on the desert trip from Egypt to the land of Canaan, but God stayed with them. He gave them food, water, and even sturdy clothes. Isn't leaving Egypt some extravagant project? For the prophet Daniel and his friends, isn't it crazy to think that God can save us from perishing in fire? For Peter, walking on water just because someone tells you you can. What's that about? But God protected his own in carrying out their pharaonic plans, to put it that way. For God, nothing is impossible. Nothing is too big or extravagant. But imagine something out of the ordinary and we start to have doubts. At first glance, this is not reasonable. It doesn't make sense. And thus we manage to limit ourselves in our projects and limit the prospects for a changed, transformed life. And besides, we are limiting God. God was there before the creation of the world. Do we agree on this point? Who imagined the world, has developed everything so that life is possible there? How can the psalmist affirm this in Psalm 139, verses 13 to 16? For you created my inmost being, you knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful, I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. What did the psalmist mean, if not that God has done a masterful work? God imagined all of this and never said afterwards, "Listen, it is me who made it. I can afford it. I am the Almighty." And if he granted us the capacity to imagine, he did not limit us. Now consider three stories from the Gospels. The first relates to the meeting of Jesus and the Syrophoenician woman. Mark 7, verses 24 to 30. Jesus left that place and went to the vicinity of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know it, yet he could not keep his presence secret. In fact, as soon as she heard about him, a woman whose little daughter was possessed by an impure spirit came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek, born in Syrian Phoenicia. She begged Jesus to drive the demon out of her daughter. "First let the children eat all they want," he told her, "for it is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs." "Lord," she replied, "even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." Then he told her, "For such a reply you may go, the demon has left your daughter." She went home and found her child lying on the bed and the demon gone. The second story relates the meeting of Jesus and two blind people. Matthew 9, verses 29 to 34. Then he touched their eyes and said, "According to your faith, let it be done to you." And their sight was restored. Jesus warned them sternly, "See that no one knows about this." But they went out and spread the news about him all over the region. While they were going out, a man who was demon-possessed and could not talk was brought to Jesus. And when the demon was driven out, the man who had been mute spoke. The crowd was amazed and said, "Nothing like this has ever been seen in Israel." But the Pharisees said, "It is by the prince of demons that he drives out demons." The third story finally relates Jesus' encounter with a cripple. Mark chapter 1, verses 40 to 45. A man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus was indignant. He reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said. "Be clean." Immediately the leprosy left him and he was cleansed. Jesus sent him away at once with a strong warning. "See that you don't tell this to anyone. But go, show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing, as a testimony to them." Instead, he went out and began to talk freely, spreading the news. As a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in lonely places. Yet the people still came to him from everywhere. You have surely noticed these people who met Jesus and who all received an answer have at least one other point in common. A pagan woman begged Jesus to cast out the demon who tormented her daughter. Two blind men followed Jesus crying, "Son of David, have mercy on us." A leper approached Jesus, begged him, fell on his knees before him and said to him, "If you want, you can make me clean." "Who are these people?" "Now, there is a pagan woman who is therefore outside the people of Israel. There are two blind people who are completely dependent on others for their basic needs. And there is a leper who is therefore unclean according to the law of Israel." So they are all people on the fringes of society in one way or another. One more thing in common. These are people who defied the prohibitions of the time. The woman addresses Jesus when Jesus first came to the Jews. The blind braved the crowd who wanted to silence them. The leper defied the prohibition in the law of Moses on approaching a healthy person. So the three of them are very proactive, even if their way of expressing their request is different. The woman throws herself at Jesus' feet. The blind cry out to Jesus. The leper meets Jesus face to face. And to the blind, Jesus asks a rather specific question. "What do you want me to do for you?" We find this disturbing question in the account of the healing of the man at the pool of Bethesda in John chapter 5. Yet it seems obvious that the blind want to regain their sight. What they want is to live the way they have surely imagined for a long time. It's part of their dreams. We can understand how much they want to see, how much they want to live like everyone else. And what are my ambitions? I'm not asking much after all. Anyway, nothing extravagant. I just wish we didn't have to wear masks anymore. I just wish I could go back to the cinema without constraints. I just want my neighbours to make less noise. I just wish we'd stop yelling at each other like I've seen at the store the last few days. I just want my kids to go back to school. "But what do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asks. "What is your ambition?" he asks. "What do you want to do with your life? Once you no longer need to wear a mask, what will you want? Once your neighbours become nice, so nice that you even find it weird, what will you want?" Jesus always asks this question, and he's asking it of us already. Can we allow ourselves the right to imagine answers to Jesus' deep question? Can we give a serious and ambitious answer? Perhaps we are still caught up in difficulties, but no one will be able to deny. For a while, our ambitions will be limited, and we will be satisfied with just a little. But the fact remains that God offers us much more than just survival. He allows me to dream of a better world where the glory of God will shine on all creation. We live in uncertainty, that's obvious. But this is not the first time that our life has been in danger. Without going back to time immemorial, when the plague was raging in France, the 20th century saw its share of deadly epidemics. Life has ended up taking over. At the end of the 60s, there were more than 30,000 deaths in 2 months due to a certain influenza. How many remember it today? Is everything falling apart today? It's possible. For some, more than for others. It's likely, yes. God has plans for us far greater than surviving, because he's God. But we must stand before God, so that, by his power, the course of things may change. Are we ready to imagine better days, which are not just epidemic-free days? Because if this one disappears, another one will appear later. But are we able to imagine better days when the glory of God will shine in our lives and we will be witnesses of the Lord's grace to all who love him? In fact, do we allow ourselves to imagine a destiny to match God's plans? A big part of our life is being prepared for the Lord's return at all times. The parable of the 10 virgins tells us about it. That of the wedding feast, that of the talents, that of the fig trees. For example, tell us that we must prepare ourselves while awaiting the return of Jesus. So if the final perspective is to find ourselves in eternity, in a world where there will be no more crying or tears, and where death will be conquered, the projects of happiness that God has in store for us also concern our life on earth. It's up to us to imagine what they can be right now. Amen.